shug, 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 shug.
Hello and welcome back to the Wizard Staff. I'm your host, Guy.
And I'm Blake.
We are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when you're talking about children's card games. It's the best time of year, because it's the end of the year, and we are wrapping up a very, very eventful 2021. It has been quite hellish.
It's been a wild ride.
Yeah, I was telling you this, but, you know, last year was hell because COVID and all that, and, you know, now we're, like, kind of past all that. It's still there a little. It's still there.
It's still happening.
It's still happening. But, you know, we've kind of gotten used to it. But, like, I've just still have not gotten used to the fact that, like, WotC's printing out all these damn cards. Like, there's so much shit. And I'm just like, oh my god, please. My life is not easy anymore.
just remember all of it. Memorize all of it. It's easy. Come on.
I used to feel so good for being able to, like, memorize a lot of that kind of stuff and just be like, yeah, I can tell you, like, everything that happened this year in regards to, like, you know, magic and stuff. But now this year, I'm like, Jesus, don't ask me. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get this all right.
Yeah, that's why we did notes, like, so we wouldn't just be freeballing it and be like, jumpstart. Wait, no, that was last year. And, oh, like, Kamigawa. Like, no, that's next year. Whoops.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, the last time we did one of these end-of-year Commander Review episodes, that was, like, episode 85. And now this is going to be episode 110, I believe. So it's been 25 episodes since doing this last year. And, yeah, it's been a wild ride. Been fun.
Oh, yeah. So I don't think we should delay this anymore. Let's just start, like, diving right into, like, all the things that happened this year.
Well, don't you want to talk about what you're drinking tonight?
Oh, I'm just drinking my Scorpion Bowl beer. It's just, like, something I've had in the fridge forever, because, like, you buy it once and you, like, eh, it's okay, but you have six of them now, and you're like, okay, I guess I'll drink this over the next, like,
6 months.
4 to 5 months.
Oh my god. I think I remember you telling me about this.
I have probably mentioned Scorpion Bowl at least 3 other times on this podcast.
At least 3 of the last 25 episodes of the last year.
Very good math, Blake. Yes,
I am a genius. As for myself, I am drinking Black Beer Dark Ale from Holy Mountain Brewing Company. That's in Seattle. Just stopped by a local tap house that just opened up close to home, like, within the last 2 years, and finally went in there, and they had this in their cooler, and I'm like, alright, I'm gonna try one of these. And it's pretty good. Like, it doesn't taste like a dark ale until, like, I swallow it, and it's, yeah, it's pretty tasty.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Alright. Sorry for jumping in the gun, but now let's dive right into 2021.
Yeah.
So we're going in chronological order. That's what we do every year, where we talk about the main kind of events that have happened in relation to Commander. And so this is the first one. We got to mention all the Rules Committee announcements. So they do 4 a year. This is the first one. Oftentimes it's about a week before the release of a game or a new set. But no updates to ban lists, so nothing came off, nothing was put on. But this was the first time this year where they announced several new CAG members, most notably Jim LePage, Rachel Weeks, Daquan Watson, and Greg Sablon, who we've had on the podcast earlier this year too, and have played some games with. And then we also got a little kind of clarification of outside game effects. I feel like that was not really that notable, to be honest. That part, at least.
Yeah, they were just clarifying, like, oh yeah, you can't pull things from, like, sideboards, because Commanders does not have sideboards. And we're not going to get into that whole topic. Like, it resurrects its ugly head every, like, 4 months and it's always the same deal. It's not going to happen, people. Just let it go. Yeah, like more of the talk was just like these new CAG members, Commander Advisory Group, people that advise the Rules Committee in their decision making for the format. And yeah, here we have four people, and all of whom I think I knew beforehand, just because they're kind of integral in the community. If you do get invested into the Magic community, like content creator.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
I think they were all very solid choices. Like, they're all from very different backgrounds. They all bring a lot of different perspectives that are advantageous to enlightening the Rules Committee about the format in multiple dimensions.
Yeah, for sure. All right. What's the first set of the year, Blake?
All right, so this was the first set, and it kind of started off strong, and it was Kaldheim. And, like, I remember just how they were really going for the marketing of this one was, like, heavy metal. Like, they got, like, a bunch of, like, heavy metal bands to, like, do a bunch of promo stuff for them. And just, like, how this set is, like, really hardcore because you've got, like, fucking Vikings-inspired set. And I think they, like, succeeded in their goal. It felt very Viking-y, and, like, I don't know a lot about Norse mythology, but people said it was pretty good. Like, there were 33 new commanders, first off, and then the top four of them, according to EDHREC.com, was Asika, God of the Tree, and then it's that commander that flips, and the backside is the prismatic bridge, and it's, like, Wooburg, so it's all five colors, so it's actually a five-color deck, even though the front of it, it's like, it looks like a mono-green card, but the backside makes it a five-color commander. And that's the one that, like, either, like, the Prismatic Bridge, like, kind of cheats things into play at the beginning of upkeep. That's the most popular one of the set. And then the second one was, like, Turgrid, God of Fright. And everyone just played the front side of, like, fucking Turgrid. And
even though the backside has, like, an infinite mana outlet to just win you the game.
Well, nobody cares about that. People want to, like, steal your stuff and then play it. And we'll come back to this topic. The next one was Orvar, the All-Form, which I think both of us kind of overlooked. I don't think we overlooked. I think we just simply forgot to mention, like, yeah, this is potentially a powerful commander. Because it's very strange. It's a very strange commander. It does something pretty unique compared to any other
commander. I think we were very much like, yeah, it's fine. It's good. Like, it's not, like, the best card ever, but, like, it's good. I don't think we spent too much time on it, and then, like, almost immediately we kind of ate our words with, like, CEDH being like, oh, check this out. Here's, like, an infinite combo with, like, this one card that just draws your whole deck and gives you infinite mana. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. Glad I got shown up like that.
It does use quite a lot of incredibly unique cards that only really go in an Orvar deck. So I think that was part of the reason why we kind of, it was difficult to assess, because, like, unless you already knew of those super obscure cards. Yeah, so that's bad on us. You're always learning, even after doing this for all these years. That's what I love about Commander. There's always something to learn. The next up is Magda, Brazen Outlaw. This one, I was a little bit surprised with how popular it was, but I'm happy, because it's, like, it does a lot of cool things, and Wizards just keeps making cards that create treasure. So, like, just going forward, like, that ability to, like, sacrifice five treasures and get, like, an artifact, or a dragon, but usually an artifact, it's pretty powerful. Put it into play. She's a strong red lady.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, the top cards were, like, the World Tree, those Pathway lands, those lands that were modal double-faced cards, and Toski, Bearer of Secrets, that squirrel card, Virgi, God of Storytelling, which, it, like, makes a mana whenever you cast, makes a red mana whenever you cast a spell, Tibble's Trickery, which is a mono red counterspell. Realm Walker, which
best
is
just two cards.
Raven Form, which was, like, kind of controversial when it came out, because it was, like, a mono blue, like, artifact removal, which doesn't usually happen. And then, like, Maskwood Nexus, which is just, like, a weird jank card that apparently a lot of people love. Yeah, so that was kind of the breakdown of the set. Like, that's kind of the cream of the crop of what rose to the top of this set in terms of commanders and the main deck cards. Yeah, like, I'm surprised with how many Turgrid decks are apparently built, according to EDHREC, because, like, so often when I see online discussion about Turgrid, it's just about how salty it makes other players because of its inherent play style. And like, I get it. I'm just surprised that it's like the number two commander of this set.
Yeah, that does surprise me that it's like a commander, because it's also still a good 99 card. Don't get us wrong.
Yeah.
So I guess like I've always kind of been more in the thoughts of like cards that I'm looking at, I more value now in the 99 because I have decks that I care about. So hearing that Turgor though was its own commander was even like more surprising to me, because I was like, oh, like I would have thought like this could just slot into a lot of good black decks, but you just decided to go all out and make your own deck for it. I guess that makes sense. But it is a mean card. I feel like it's kind of the same when I play Skittles. Like, oh, you're gonna do that. Okay. We're just gonna target you now.
Yeah. And another thing that surprised me was, like, Gorenklex Monstrous Raider. I would have thought that would not be played, like, as a commander, but, like, be more popular in the main deck. But apparently not.
I was looking at the price, and it's... I mean, it's not cheap. It's still about $23.
Yeah, but that's makes like, sense.
A pretty fair price for card, especially being this powerful. Like, you know, if you don't pick one up now, and then maybe in another year or two, this would be a lot. Yeah, it was a. It's just another doubling season. It's a more affordable doubling season.
I think they're slightly different, but they're pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, this effect is better the way that you want it, and in green too, especially. Like, you got all these green tutors, like. I don't know if I said that in our review, but like, you know, this is a good card. People, play this card. I'm not playing this card. I need to. Oh, I'm going to start playing this card.
So, overall, what do you think of this set? Do you think WotC accomplished their goal of making, like, a Viking-inspired set, Kaldheim?
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing, too, that we didn't mention was, you know, Snowlands came back.
Oh, yeah, that was, like, a huge thing, like,
And snow instants and snow sorceries were a big role. That's not so much, I think, only like one or two of them are notable now. Hopefully that just means snow gets more popular and people can start playing Snowlands more. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see many more snow cards unless we return to Kaldheim, though, right?
It probably just depends where we're going, because they've done it on other planes, too.
Okay, true.
Overall, the theme of Kaldheim, with the Viking gods and everything, 10 out of 10. Pretty sweet slew of cards, so we got some good commanders, and even those can be like 99, and we got some good 99 cards, so like, you know, gonna get that like a solid 8 out of 10, and like, the art's nice, so like 10 out of 10. Yeah, this ranks pretty high on my list for the year. It's only the beginning.
Yeah, because next up, like, in mid-March, we got Time Spiral Remastered, and this was a product that had no new commanders, but it did have a lot of, like, notable reprints, so, like, it had Beast Within, and, like, Path to Exile, Damnation, like, that was a big fucking deal that Damnation got reprinted, because players have been asking for years for a reprint of that, and, like, Mark Rosewater has explained why Damnation is, like, a really hard card to reprint.
The pack cycle.
Just a number of those are expensive. Yeah, just had a lot of good reprints, and I think we'll probably talk about this at the end of the episode. Just like, is WotC printing enough reprints of cards since Commander's grown in popularity, and like, just so many more cards are like becoming more and more expensive because there's so many cards that are played in Commander. We'll talk about that later, though.
Yeah. We got rules update number 2. The only main kind of thing that they noted in this one that was they clarified the rules for the modal double face cards. You need the front side to be a legendary creature, and then the back side can be whatever you want. And then the commander tax applies to each side. But that's it. I don't feel like I've seen, actually, well, at least in our playgroup, I haven't seen any modal double face commanders yet, so I'll be interested to play against someone who does do that.
Yeah, I mean, this was a pretty uneventful rules committee update. I think everyone was like really confused about modal double faced cards, like, and just how all these weird rules interactions work with it, but I think people have maybe not fully understood it, but like, enough, they understand it enough to where, like, they could just play, like, a normal game and not be like, oh, what the fuck is this? How do I use this?
Yeah.
All right, next set we have is Strixhaven. This came out, like, late April, and there were 22 new commanders. And the top four of them, again, according to EDHREC.com, was Extras, Auric Overlord, and it's the white, black, like, human warlock on the front, and on the back, it's, like, the Rakdos demon-looking thing that's a sorcery. So, like, on one side, it's a legendary creature, and then on the back side, it's a sorcery. So, again, like, WotC already immediately exploring the possibilities of MDFCs. And I'm kind of surprised this was, like, the number one, but I guess it kind of makes sense in hindsight. Because, like, of all the commanders, like, they were all kind of, like, medium, in my opinion. Like, because next up was, like, Dina Soul Steeper, which is a Golgari human druid lady. And she, I don't know, whenever you gain life, each opponent loses one life and then has some sort of, like, sac ability to pump her power up based on the sacrifice creature's power. Honestly, I'm surprised this is number two. I kind of forgot about her. But I do remember this next one, which was Cody how do you say this?
Phosphorus?
Thank you. For once, you're the one who can pronounce things. Cody. Everyone used to call him Cody.
I totally guess. That's not an accurate thing. That's just my guess.
Vociferous like, Codex. Yeah, he's
the Phosphorus? Phosphorus?
No. No. But it's just like, at first it looks like a colorless artifact creature, but it's actually like a five-color commander because of its activated ability. It's super fucking weird, like, because it's like you can't cast permanent spells, but like people kind of use it as like a cascade-y type deck. Actually, like CDH viable, pretty powerful.
Yeah, that completely surprised me when just they were like, oh, we broke Cody with the next set, because there was a card in there, I think, that made it like
profane
just tutor. Busted. Yep.
That didn't last long. Yeah. Last one was Belladross Witherbloom. It's just like the Golgari elder dragon that like makes some pest tokens and can untap your lands with some life. The top like main deck cards were pretty interesting in my opinion. They were Stormkiln Artist, which holy shit that card does work. Solve the Equation, which is like a blue tutor for like a sorcery or something. Wandering Archaic, which is a really funky colorless creature. Archmage Emeritus, which is a blue creature that can draw you a whole bunch of cards, like Fracture, which is like a Orzhov removal spell. Culling Ritual, which is like this board wipe slash mana ramp sorcery. Plum of the Forbidden, which is kind of an obscure draw card if you sacrifice creatures. And then like Resculpt, which similar to Ravenform from the previous set, is like a blue like removal spell that can again like remove an artifact, which usually blue can't do. And there was another hissy fit from the fan base, and then WotC was like, all right, we're not gonna make those kind of cards anymore. So that was like the 99. Guy, what are your general thoughts of this set?
I'm kind of holding my thoughts up a little because I just have more thoughts on Strixhaven as a total because Commander 2021 was a part of this. But if I were to just kind of look at it for a set itself and not take it into account, also just, I know the theme was the, kind of similar to like the Harry Potter parallel. Thematically, like it works a little because, you know,
magic school.
Spells. Yeah, magic school. I just feel like the cards weren't as enriching, I guess. Like, I wasn't sucked into the flavor as much as I was for, like, Kaldheim. But we did get some okay cards. Overall, this one's just, like, fine with me. Like, yeah, Strixhaven was cool. Wasn't my favorite.
Okay. I kind of appreciated this set specifically because here are these, like, essentially guilds, but instead of, like, doing the typical things that, like, all these guilds do, like, the guilds have these different school names, and these color combinations were doing things that weren't necessarily breaking the color pie, but just were doing things that they never really done before. Like, you know how, like, the Boros...
You know what? That is a good point. I did completely forget about that. But yes, you are bringing up a good point.
Like, the Boros cards were doing, like, a lot of, like, reanimator stuff, which normally doesn't quite do...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you remember now?
Yes, I do remember that. I think that... It's very apparent in the Commander decks, but you're right. There are cards like that, too,
yeah. In
the main set that kind of do it.
I found it refreshing, like, just after... Because, like, doing this podcast and, like, just keeping track of everything, you're like, all right, same old, every single set. And, like, you recognize patterns, and this one was like, oh, this Golgari card does what now? Like, oh, that's so funky. That's weird. It doesn't usually do that. It was just like, I don't know. It was, like, refreshing. Refreshing's the best word I can use to describe the sensation I had.
Yes, yeah, so I'll give Strixhaven and Commander 2021 more points in my book now, because it did do that. You're right. But let's talk about Commander 2021 a little bit. And also, if you go back and listen to, like, our reviews on these episodes, we teamed up with Commander Theory to, like, talk about all these cards. Very long, long, long session.
It turns out, when you get four people who just love to fucking talk about Magic, you end up with a really long podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god.
It was insane.
Oh god. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, so I'm looking at this list, and we got new commanders. We had five decks. Each one had four new commanders, so 20 total. The most popular one is Breena, the Demagogue. Two, Sephai, Thunder Conductor. Willowdusk, Essence Seer. Ozgear, the Reconstructor. Wait.
So, I...
Okay. I biffed that. I was reading this list as the top commanders, but now I'm like, oh wait, this is just the commander decks. And it's like, I don't think that's right, but that's surprising. Because yeah, Ozgear's the most popular. Okay. Do we restart that, or am I just going off of my mistake?
You can just roll with it. Yeah, because, yeah, the top four commanders were, like, Ozgear, the Reconstructor. Then it was who's, like, the Boros dude who, like, can make copies of artifacts. Then the second one is, like, Veyran, Voice of Duality, which is an Izzet wizard that, like, pumps herself up with magecraft. And then copies, like, instants and sorcery, like, triggers or whatever, an additional time. Then there's Adrix and Nev, a Simic commander that, like, basically doubles your tokens. And then Breena, like, is the Orzhov bird warlock that is, like, does weird political things. And it was designed by Sheldon, father of the format. I was surprised this one was so high.
Oh, yeah. That is surprising to me, too.
I don't know. We kind of shit-talked on that card. Anywho, the top cards were, like, Archaeomancer's Map, which there was a lot of discussion about, as well as Monologue Tax, Guy's favorite card.
I'm so upset the card's not as good as I wanted it to be.
Yeah, we both are.
I've taken it out of all my decks that I was, like, hyped to run it in. I was like, oh, hell yeah. No. Archaeomancer's Map is a slap. That's a good card.
There was also Commander's Insight. There's Cursed Mirror, which is just a really good, like, mana rock for mono red.
I was not high on that card. That card is so good.
Right. Ah, you've been fooled. You've been bamboozled so much this year. We both have. It's fine. What else was there? There was, like, Laelia, Rionya, and Ink Shield. What are your general thoughts of this Commander Precon cycle?
It is cool that they are all doing different things, as we kind of already mentioned in Strixhaven. I'm not as, like, high on this cycle, mainly because there's not as many notable 99 cards. Like, last year we had the free cycle of cards that, you know, was part of that commander cycle, like Fierce Guardianship, Deadly Relic, Deflecting SWAT, and then there's a white and a green one. I don't know. The three I mentioned are the really good ones. And then, yeah, I felt like last year just had more stuff that I was happy with overall. This feels like the cards made for these decks were so specific that it's like, okay, well, that's only being played in this deck. I guess that is kind of the downside, if you think about it, to like having the black and white cards do something else that they haven't done before. Any of these cards that are kind of doing new things, like the only decks that they're going to work in are kind of well refined in this circle of cards that are like Strixhaven themed, you know?
Yeah, I do like how a number of these commanders have enough numbers to where like I actually like kind of see them every once in a while. Currently, like a set comes out, and then in conjunction with that set, there's also like one or two like commander decks that WotC just kind of prints out as well. And we're just like, oh, okay, like there's a set, and now there's always like one or two commander decks that accompany it. So like, because of that phenomenon, in my opinion, like when the commander pre-con cycle of the year drops, it's almost like those ones like really have to be up to snuff, because it's like we're getting all these other commander precons throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
So this specific cycle, this specific dedicated precon cycle that's specifically for commander, like better live up to like the format's expectations. So,
and do you think that it did this year?
You know, I think it does, because as you were saying, like each of them like has their own identity. They're all unique, and I think for me, I really appreciated the fact that like Ozgear, the Reconstructor, really like struck a chord with a lot of the fan base, because he's the number one most built, and like it's kind of hard to inspire the player base to really like Boros, in my opinion, because like, you know, like it's definitely gotten better over the last like 2 years, and especially even just this year, but like it's hard to inspire players to care about Boros because like you don't have the best card selection historically speaking. But like, because like the last time I see people really excited to build Boros is like fucking like Feather the Redeemed or like fucking Winota, and like the last time I saw players this hyped to build Boros has been Ozgear. So it's like, all right, like come on players, like let's make more Boros decks, like let's get it going. Let's make it happen.
There will be at least one new Boros commander every year that is inspiring to the player base. Yeah. At this point,
I'm rooting for the color identity underdog, which I guess if I is probably white. We'll talk about that later. Anyways, what's the next set?
Well, this next set is a banger. It's Modern Horizons 2. We had 17 new commanders, and the other notable thing I think about Modern Horizons 2 was fetch land reprints, and they have come down pretty significantly in price. Like, I think you can buy all five now for under $100.
Wow.
Of the enemy cycle, at least. That's pretty big, considering, like, Scalding Tarn at one point was a $100 card, and you had four, modern players would be playing four of them. So the top four commanders, though, for this set were Chatterfang, Squirrel General, which was actually a Golgari Squirrel General because it had black in its color identity. And I think this one probably seems the most popular because we did get Squirrel cards in this set, and there hasn't really been a good Squirrel legendary that cares about squirrels. We did get Tolski, which people are like, oh, cool, but it just doesn't care about squirrels, whereas Chatterfang does.
Yeah, and there's been a great debate about whether squirrels are, like, too meme-y for black border, or if they should stay in silver border, and it's been going on for years, and apparently, like, this is, like, our first true, like, squirrel tribal black border card. And I think it's fairly well received, and I think we might talk about like silver border later in this.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter now. It's all black border, baby.
Oh my god, nothing matters.
All right,
this next one.
Oh yeah, okay. Sithis Harvitan, green white enchantment creature. It's like a true enchantress deck. Because she herself is an enchantress, where it says whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you gain one life and draw a card. So, pretty good. Lonus, cryptozoologist, who was the Clue Maker, right? Yeah, Clue Maker, or Clues Matter deck.
Yeah, it makes clues.
Which players were excited about because it wasn't really a good Clues Matter commander, but actually, ironically, I think we got like 3 this year, which is pretty nuts when you think about it. It's like, here's not one option, here's 3. And then Garp One Eye, who is a Wooburg commander, who does something pretty unique. He creates token copies of cards that have existed in Magic before. And the most notable one on there, of course, is Black Lotus.
Oh, yeah. People
lost. They're like, what? Everyone can play with a Black Lotus now?
Now I need to buy a real one so I can use it as my token.
Right. And then, not only that, but we got some pretty good 99 cards. So, some of the notable ones. Esper Sentinel, which is a somewhat white Ristic Study on a stick. We got Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth, which is a green Urborg. We got Dam, which probably the second best board wipe we got all year, if not the best. It's probably in contention.
Watsi's always printing board wipes, and this one's actually good.
Yeah, they try, but like oftentimes they're just kind of like, no, Wrath of the God's still better. But now you're like, oh wait, okay, this one's a little better. Ignoble Hierarch, Dothy Voidwalker, kind of like a black CEDH staple now. Tireless Tracker, Urza's Saga, First Enchantment Land. Roggavon, who is
Monkey.
Very expensive, considerably so. Profane Tutor, who is the card that we were talking about that pairs so well with Cody. Liquid Metal Torque, and then the Elemental Cycle is actually quite notable too. Forgot about them. Solitude, Grief, Subtlety, Endurance, and Fury.
Yeah, some of them are better than others in this format, but yeah, I agree.
I think Fury and Solitude were definitely the better two, which is nice for white and red to get.
I think Endurance is pretty good.
Endurance is fine, yeah. It's a little more niche, I think, but I think the notable thing, though, is like the red and white one are probably the best in, like, oftentimes in cycles. Like, theirs kind of suck.
That's not usually the case. Yeah, if there's a cycle of cards, usually the white and red ones aren't the best ones.
Yeah, but this year I'm like, oh no, like, we got the best ones. I remember last year, or 2 years ago with Modern Horizons 2, and it's like, oh blue, you get a free counterspell. Oh green, you get this, like, really neat destroy target artifacts and enchantments.
Yeah, Force of Vigor.
Here's a free kill spell again for black. Have fun. And then, I don't even know. The white one was a pump effect.
So, Force of Virtue was the white one, and it was like an anthem. The blue one was Force of Negation. That's fucking strong, because it's a counterspell. The green one was like Force of Vigor, and it could destroy some artifacts and enchantments. The black one was Force of Despair, which was like instant speed, like, kind of destroy some creatures that ETB'd that turn. And then, like, Force of Rage, and it sucks ass. It makes, like, token.
I actually played in Purpose, because you cast it for free to make tokens, and it's like, well, that's free. That's free 4 damage. Blake, do you not understand?
You hurt me. Why do you hurt
me? Like, oh my god, I can't wait to cast this next time and be like, yeah, just, I'm going to exile one red card to cast this for free to just deal 4 damage to everyone. Like, that's not...
Oh wow, go -2 in card advantage, spend 3 mana, deal 4 damage to me, holy shit, I'm so afraid.
Actually, why is that? That sounds worse than I thought when you say it out loud like this. Okay, I might consider cutting
Got
it.
Him.
Just add in, like, Red Elemental Blast, I don't know. Notes for future guy. But yeah, we got really good cards.
Yeah, like, when I think back on this set, as a whole, I just look back on, like, all of the cards that typically go in the 99, and I'm just like, holy shit, this set is, like, a banger for, like, Commander. Like, there's just so many good cards, like, fucking Esper Sentinel. Like, I love playing it. I see it played against me all the time. Like Dothy Voidwalker, or the Saga, fucking Raghavan, like, fucking damn. Like, I just see these cards so much because they're very strong. Yeah, and I listen to so many, you know, part of this podcast is, like, listening to other podcasts, and I've just listened to so many that, like, you know, everyone was joking, like, can you say Asmora Namartika Dyson Occultikar's full name or not? And so I listened to so many goddamn other content creators that, yes, now I can say Asmora Namartika Dyson Occultikar.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try that.
Oh, come on.
Asmo. That's it.
Asmo. Asmo is what normal people say.
Should we move on to the third update from the Rules Committee?
Yeah, the third update came in mid-July, and they introduced two new CAG members, Kristen Gregory, who's done a lot of MTG articles, and Elizabeth Rice, who I believe is an MTG streamer. Correct me if I'm wrong. They also clarified some rules on dungeons from the previous sets. Maybe that was later. But nobody cared about that shit, because, oh baby, they banned Hull Breacher. That's right. That blue card back from Commander Legends, that fucking stupid-ass grin. Like,
I feel like we called it, we kind of reviewed it, and we're like, this is going to get banned. Like, we were almost positive about that.
Did we? Did we have that foresight?
I'm pretty sure we did, like, as we looked at it. Because, you know, when Commander Legends came out, people were kind of arguing, like, oh, what's the strongest card? Is it Jeweled Lotus, Opposition Agent, Hull Breacher? And
yeah, those were the three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone lost their,
And, you know, people were talking about Opposition Agent and Jeweled Lotus so much, but, like, no, it was definitely a Hull Breacher. Just, like, you know, Opposition Agent is very circumstantial. Jeweled Lotus is just, like, you know, it's a ritual that everyone can use, like, or most decks, like, a good chunk, but it's fine. But yeah, Hull Breacher was also just, like, not great fun to play against. Like, unless you're the one playing it, like, you're probably a little annoyed, to be honest.
Yeah, so just to greatly oversimplify, basically the Rules Committee banned this card because it synergizes with wheel effects, like Wheel of Fortune and other wheel effects, in a very offensive manner, instead of being defensive, and it kind of struck a chord with the play pattern. It's all about the play pattern and how it strips everyone's hands, all of your opponent's hands, and then you have a hand, and then you're the only one playing Magic. It's a similar play pattern to Leovold, Emissary of Trest. And again, that's a gross oversimplification, but that's basically why Hull Breacher, like Leovold, also got banned. If you disagree with it, congratulations. You can meet up with your playgroup and you can all talk and you can decide, yeah, you want to play Hull Breacher. But I think this was from what I remember and from what's happened in the following months, this is a banning that I think most of the player base is okay with.
Yeah.
Or positive about.
It definitely seemed, because even on like the powerful side of things, like in CEDH, they were quite pleased to see this go. Whereas, like, sometimes they're a little, like, on the fence. Like, I feel like they were more on the fence about Paradox Engine, where it's like, yeah, we could see why you'd ban that, and, like, but, you know, it's fine when you're just playing with it on, like, CEDH. Not that it's not powerful, but, like, the Hull Breacher getting banned feels a lot more like both ends of the, like, power level spectrum can agree, like, this is not fun. Between casual and competitive.
Yeah, so that was pretty well received. Next set we have is Adventures in the Forgotten Realm, which came out in July. There were 30 new commanders, and the top four of them, according to EDH Rec, was Volus, Guide of Monsters. It's the Simic dude who's sitting in a chair, drinking a beer, and it's like, you can cast a creature as long as it doesn't share a creature type with other creatures, so it's like anti-tribal tribal. It's kind of interesting. You copy those creatures, by the way. There's Tiamat, which is a five-color dragon with five heads. And it's just, people love dragons, so of course it's popular. And then we have Xanathar, Guild Kingpin, which is like a beholder, just giant fucking floating eye. That's Dimir. And I'm kind of surprised it's as popular as it is, given how it's sort of like a super nerfed centriplets. It's different, but that's the closest comparison I have to explain to you people really quickly. And then number four was Trelisara, Moon Dancer. It's a Simic elf cleric that, like, whenever you gain life, you put a +1/+1 counter on her and scry one. She's sort of like a soul sister effect, sort of. And the top cards were Treasure Vault, that land that can create treasure tokens. Deadly Dispute, Circle of Dreams Druid, which is Gaia's Cradle on a stick. Old Gnawbone, which had a little bit of contention about just, oh, a big dumb green creature card that can make a fuck ton of mana. Wizard Class, Unexpected Windfall, and Zorn. So overall, this set, I don't know, especially when you compare it directly to the other previous sets, both in terms of Commanders and the 99, bit of a snore. It wasn't quite for me. And I also don't play D&D, so I could not appreciate any of the D&D references, which a lot of people were just going insane about, like, oh my god, look at the reference they made here, and oh my god, look at the reference they made here. Because for anyone who doesn't know, Wizards of the Coast not only makes Magic the Gathering, but they also make Dungeons and Dragons, which is this crossover. So they kind of knew everything to make this the ultimate crossover to be whatever.
Yeah, to be. I think.
What do you think?
Even not as a D&D player, I totally could appreciate the D&D aspects, because you had dice rolling, which was the first.
Oh yeah, that was another big deal, because that was like previously silver border and they're making it black border. That was another big deal.
This set kind of took place of the core set, which, as we kind of know, is like more of an introductory set, typically. And WotC makes that kind of stuff because, you know, it brings in the players and is a really easy way to digest Magic. Like, you know, they just have a bunch of returning mechanics, nothing ever new. Yeah, this definitely took that place because it did feel very easy. Nothing was like too crazy high powered, but it was just fun with these dice rolling cards, with these like options on a lot of the cards. Like, they were pretty modal in the way that it's like not always going to be the same thing. You have choices, so it's like, you know, do I counter this spell or do I draw three cards kind of thing. Like, they had a lot of flavor text. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was tons of flavor. So Adventures of the Forgotten Realm was like the main set. What were the commander decks that accompanied this?
Well, we did get four. So typically we do get two, but we got four for this one. And we got Galea, Kindler of Hope, which is a Bant, Aura and Equipment Matters. So kind of like a Voltron deck. Prosper Tomebound, which is a Rakdos commander who cares about casting stuff from exile, who has gone on to be pretty strong. I've seen some pretty cool decks. You got Sephiroth of the Hidden Ways, which was a Dungeons Matter deck. Yeah, dungeons were great. That was another thing. Psych, dungeons are
pretty
fine.
Underwhelming.
Yeah. And then you got Vrondas, Rage of Ancients, who is kind of another Dragons Matter deck, but also still very gruel in the terms, in the sense of, like, you have a lot of creatures fighting still. So that was interesting. These were also, I think, just, like, kind of underwhelming in the sense of, like, all the new cards were, like, pretty, like, basic. Like, nothing was, like, crazy strong.
Yeah, nothing, like, pops out. Like, oh, wow, this was in the set. Wow.
Yeah, because, again, like, this kind of goes along with the D&C set where it's, like, a little easier and not as, like, crazy powerful. It's just a good introductory set for people who are new to Magic.
I agree with that. All right, shortly after Adventures of the Forgotten Realm, the Rules Committee put out their last rules update for the year, and that was, like, mid-September. So, on a minor note, they removed Rule 10, and Rule 11 was renumbered to Rule 10. It's not that really. It's just, like, an obscure rule that, like, everyone at the Rules Committee was like, wait, do we even need this on the books anymore? And everyone was like, no. And it's like, all right, let's tidy this up. And they just kind of got rid of it. And a really small footnote. But the bigger thing, the very big thing here, was two things. They unbanned Worldfire, and they banned Golos Tireless Pilgrim.
It's crazy.
This was very big. This was a... Oh, God, this was a shit show. Do you want to talk about it first, a little bit?
So, Worldfire unbanned. Can I give you a quick rundown? It was banned due to the problematic interaction with floating mana and having access to your commander. We went to foster a commander environment where 8 and 9 mana spells are viable and likely to slow up a game, so we evaluate the expense ones in that context. So, unlike Coalition Victory and Battle Rhythm, which we continue to believe are problematic in that environment, level of effort needed to make Worldfire effective is sufficient that we suspect it will not be made much of an issue. There are already cheaper ways to do similar things in the format. We believe the social contract and robust pregame discussions will keep Worldfire out of games in which it doesn't belong. So they're starting to recognize that like some of these like cards that they had on banned are not actually that problematic. You know,
Do you want to know how many times I've seen Worldfire since it's been unbanned?
Zero, like probably.
Three months ago? Zero.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen this card. Which is funny because, like, you know, speculators obviously saw that this was unbanned and this card price shot up like crazy. So, like, people bought them, but, like, no one's playing them. Like, it's all just speculators. Well, I shouldn't say that. But a lot of it is speculators. And people... I don't know, players don't actually want to play Worldfire, because, yeah, surprise, surprise, it's kind of an anticlimactic way to end a game, even if you use it to win. It's like, yeah, it's kind of interesting, because it's been on the ban list for so long, it's been a topic of, like, great discussion whenever people do, like, ban list discussion episodes of the Commander ban list. So it's just kind of, I'm interested to see where it'll be, like, in a year, if I'll still... never have played against it, or maybe the one or two times that I do, like, what it's like. I'm really curious.
Yeah. So, that was pretty irrelevant. Now let's talk about something relevant. Golos, Tireless Pilgrim Band. Oh gosh. God. Okay. Let me read this real quick. So, the greatest is that in the low to middle tiers where we focus the banlist, Golos is simply a better choice of leader for all but the most commander-centric decks. Its presence crushes the kind of diversity in commander choice which we want to promote. You can drop Golos and a few 5-color lands into a random deck and get all the ramp and card advantage you would ever want from a commander with no worries about your mana base. Golos' ability effectively reduces the commander tax to 1, and once you hit 7 mana with Golos, assuring that you have Wooburg and... hoping to get there quickly, you don't need to do anything for the rest of the game except cast spells for free. Something we always want to be careful about. We talked about to the folks in Studio X and they understand the problems created by generically powerful 5-color commanders that don't have Wooburg in their mana cost. We don't expect similar cards to come from them in the future, so a surgical strike now makes sense. We understand that many players love Golos, so we don't take this action lightly. In the end, the health of the format is our primary concern, and we find Golos unhealthy. While Counter-Earth the Return King is similar, flexible, and popular commander for good stuff 5-color decks, we see it clearly as a step down for Golos. Holy moly, that's a lot. We never talked about this, because, like, it was just so crazy with everything.
It was like, I wanted the discourse to settle down. And then by the time, like, things settled down, like, the next set was being released, and so it's like, oh, well, let's talk about the new set. And it just kind of got away from us. Yeah, so we never actually put out an episode on this topic, but, yeah, we kind of waited on it, because this one was a bit more of a hot-button topic in terms of, like, bans or unbans. In my opinion, it seems like, you know, people don't really talk about it now, three months later. But I still feel like there are lots and lots of players that do not think that Golos should have been banned. And they still think that. They just maybe don't vocalize it as much now that the MTG hype has moved focus onto the latest set or the latest secret layer. I think there's still a lot of unresolved general feelings about this banning in the community. I'm fine with it. To some degree, I don't know, yeah.
I was gonna say, it is kind of surprising, but we did kind of get a warning about Golos a while back when, you know, I think one thing that also happened this year earlier when they were kind of like hinting at, yeah, Hull Breacher is about to get banned because we don't like wheel effects. And, I mean, people freaked out about, like, oh, you can't ban all the wheels. And it's like, well, no, that's not what we're doing, and that's what we said we're not doing. So, obviously, we're not doing that. Like, we clearly stated that. But, then, yeah, we banned Hull Breacher. And in there, they said, like, something about, like, Golos, too. So, it's just kind of weird that we did kind of see this coming. But, you know, people are still blindsided that I think that it actually still happened.
Yeah, that was another thing where, like, a lot of people felt blindsided. I felt blindsided. And I know that, I think Sheldon said, like, whenever they do a banning, they kind of want to feel like the player base has kind of had time and opportunity to hear, like, the rules committee say things that might hint towards them banning. And, like, I think Sheldon said, like, he wished he'd kind of done a better job, like, kind of hinting towards the player base. Because, yeah, a lot of people felt blindsided. Like, there's always going to be people who are blindsided by bans or unbans because they're just, like, not as knowledgeable about the format. And you don't need to know everything. But I think a lot of people, for this particular banning, were just completely blindsided and not expecting it.
I think what's also... The other thing I wanted to add is just, like, when you also think about, like, so what was the card banned before this? Hull Breacher. Okay. Like, even without them hinting at it, the power level of that card was, like, crazy. And I could totally see, like, a reasonable way of, like, calling for it to be banned. Whereas, like, then you have to think, like, oh, so, okay, I guess, like, you know, Hull Breacher gone, what's the next best card? It's not Golos, by any means, that's, like, making me freak out. Like Hull Breacher did, so it's kind of like, yeah, it really wasn't like a problem card. I think, like, I've played against Golos decks plenty of times. He's a great introductory commander, but like the decks were fine.
So I kind of agree with you. Like, actually playing against Golos in like mid to low power tiers, like generally speaking, was kind of okay. Like, I think it's just more of, like, what the card itself represents. Like, at the time, it was the number one most built commander on, like, EDH Rec by, like, a wide margin. And it's just, like, the ultimate five-color good stuff. You can do what anything... You can do, like, any strategy you want in Golos, because it's just, like, ramp and card... Like, generic card advantage in Wooburg. So you can play all the best cards or whatever you want. And it just really kind of homogenized the format. And I know the counter-argument to that is banning the number one most popular commander, like, doesn't seem that healthy. Like, that affects so many people. And I'd argue, like, that's all the more reason to, like, consider banning it. Like, if a commander, which I consider to be, like, one of the most diverse formats of Magic, if it's being homogenized to such an extreme degree where this is, like, the number one most built commander by a wide margin, like, I think that's a red flag, if anything.
Yeah.
And like they said, like, everyone's like, well, it's just gonna default to Kenrith, and it's like, alright, yeah, like, the rules committee literally knew you were gonna say that, and they addressed that in their statement. Read the fucking... It's amazing how many people do not read the fucking statements that the rules committee put out. They just hear a card is banned or unbanned, and they don't actually read the post, and so they don't get full context. I've been doing this so long, I just shake my head.
Yeah.
Angry old man who yells at clouds. Alright. Guy, what was the last few things of this year?
Okay, well, we got two more sets. So we got Innistrad Midnight Hunt, which is our return to Innistrad after, I think, 5 years. And what's cool about this is, like, they had two Innistrad sets back-to-back. So this is kind of like part one, and it was kind of teased as the werewolf-centric one. So we had 17 new commanders. So the top four commanders were Tovalar, Dire Overlord, who is a actual werewolf commander. Who cares about werewolves? Because the community has been asking for that for a long time.
So long.
And then we have Vavrik, Astral Archmage, who is one blue-red, a legendary creature human wizard. He's kind of a Night or Day deck, which is the mechanic that was kind of the part that combined the two sets, because they each utilize that mechanic and kind of like the transforming cards. Then we had Lisa, Forgotten Archangel, who returns, similar to Sigarda coming back. And we originally had seen Lisa in the Commander Legends set, but we found out that she died, so somehow she comes back. I didn't read the story.
I don't know the lore.
Yeah, maybe I'll learn it now, because I like Lisa. So then, last top four is Old Stickfingers, X Black Green, Legendary Creature Horror. When you cast a spell, what does it do? It's a creature's revealed this way into your graveyard. Oh, it cares about creatures in the graveyard.
Gets power and toughness equal to the number of creatures in your grave. It can be Golgari combo, or it could just be like Golgari creature good stuff. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. But some notable 99 cards. We got the first iteration of the Slowlands. We got Infernal Grasp, Meat Hook Massacre, Vanquish the Horde. Yeah. Vanquish the Horde, which is the other best board wipe of the year, probably. Augur of Autumn, Moon Silver Key, Unnatural Growth, Consider, Sarf the Viper's Fang. So yeah. I mean, in my opinion, like, we've gotten quite a lot of sets. This one kind of is in the same camp as Strixhaven for me, where it's fine. It's got some stuff, but like nothing I'm crazy about.
I would agree with that statement, similar to Adventures of the Forgotten Realm. Everything's just sort of in the middle. Like, it's not bad, but it's not like, oh my god, look at this. Like, maybe the exception is Meat Hook Massacre.
Yeah, that's definitely the best card in the set.
Yeah, also, you already mentioned it, but I'm going to reiterate, thank god, like, they... Like, WotC knew. They knew from the very beginning. That was, like, one of the first things they knew. Like, we need to have, like, a actual good werewolf commander, because the fan... Like, ever since I started playing back in, like, 2015, people have been, like, telling WotC, like, please make a better werewolf commander! Please make a better werewolf commander! Like, Ulrich really is not that powerful. Like, oh, we want better cards. We want more werewolf cards. And it's like, thank god WotC made this card, so I don't have to hear that anymore. It's one less thing I have to hear people rant about.
That's true. Though, one, you might hear, we want another one, just because, like, he's the only option now.
Oh my god.
It is difficult, though, so I'm glad that it did finally happen. But it is, they kind of explain in a lot of videos why it's taken so long. Just because, like, you know, it's a double-faced card, and there's a lot of restrictions around that. So that's why they couldn't, like, print one in Commander Legends. From, like, a printing
standpoint, right?
Right. So, you know, it does show that they're listening, but, like, you know, players have to trust that, like, yeah, we'll do it, but, like, it can't just be, like, whenever. Though, I guess, like, if they're starting to just do secret layers like this, maybe it could be. I don't know.
One more thing I want to add is, like, I'm surprised that Malevolent Hermit didn't seem that much play, according to EDH Rec. I feel like that's a mistake. I feel like that's a sleeper card. Yeah, that's just my opinion, though.
Okay.
Oh, another thing I remember people saying was, like, this came out and there's, like, a bunch of werewolves, and people were like, we want more werewolves! Give me more pictures of Spider-Man! Give me more werewolves! I'm just like, yo, guys, remember, this is like a back-to-back set. Like, we just got Crimson Vow. They're gonna give us more werewolves in that set, too. Chill out.
Well, we actually didn't get any werewolves in Crimson Vow, I think. Or we didn't get any legendary creature, but we did get a lot of werewolf cards.
Werewolf cards. Yeah.
All right. Innistrad, Crimson Vow. This came out just like a month and a half later, kind of towards the beginning of November. Blake and I actually went to the pre-release for that, which was fun.
Yeah, remember what I pulled?
Oh, yeah. You got the number one commander, Toxrill the Corrosive.
Yeah,
so, like, we're sitting there, and I'm like, man, I just hope my pre-release card is good. Like, that's really all I care about. And you're like, I think the only card I want is the Slug. And lo and behold, we open our packs, there you have the slug, and I just have some black rare that I don't even really remember now. Apparently it was good in the limited format, but I didn't even use it, so I, like, joke's on me, I guess.
Yeah, I just remember before, like, as they were handing them out, like, the three of us were like, do we want to switch these boxes? And we all said no, because if we do, and we get something good, we're just going to be bitter towards each other. So,
yep.
I'm glad we did that, because, yeah.
Okay, so Toxrill, Runo Stormkirk, who is a Dimir vampire, but he also cares about, like, Leviathans and Krakens. Yeah. So it was cool that we also kind of got commander that cared about that. We had another frog, but not Gitrog, Grolnok the Omnivore, who's a Simic frog who pretty much wants you to, like, mill cards so you can, like, play cards.
Yeah.
And then we had Olivia, Crimson Bride, who came back as she had married Edgar. Her card's a lot more notable than Edgar's. Edgar's was kind of like, eh.
I think that's fine. People complain about original Edgar Markov too much. I'm fine with them having a weak one, honestly, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then so the other Slowlands, we got Welcoming Vampire, Hullbreaker Horror, Cultivator Colossus, Wash Away, and then Overcharge Amalgam as, like, some of our top new 99 cards. And, I mean, personally, I like this set more. I think it's the only other aesthetic I really liked of the year. Like, I was mentioning kind of like Kaldheim. I really felt like it was, like, Viking-themed. I totally got, like, the Vampire Wedding theme from these cards more so than I think any other set kind of... Well, no, the D&D set actually had, like, great flavor, so I can't knock that one. So, yeah. I guess, like, overall, this set I was, like, more impressed with than, like, the last couple sets, though.
I agree. It wasn't, like, a home run, but, like, there are cards in here that are really unique and really interesting. Like, Toxrill, like, that's a really unique effect. The Frog, that's pretty unique. And then Runo Stromkirk, like, being a vampire on one side, but then, like, caring about, like, sea monsters on the other, that's also very unique. And then the Hullbreaker Horror and, like, Cultivator Colossus are, like, these really big, dumb, Timmy cards that go in Battlecruiser Magic. And, yeah, so there's a few things that really catch my eye. And, like, there was also a whole big discussion about Welcoming Vampire when it came out, and mono-white card draw discussions, and so there were a few things in this set that grabbed my attention versus the other half.
Yeah, so that was all the standard and, I guess, Modern Horizons too. We talked about that. So that was all the standard releases. Continuing the trend from last year, I believe last year is when the Secret Lair started. Mm-hmm. This year we got 35 new Secret Lairs. Is that right? That's more than two a week. That's crazy. Oh my god, that's so many.
Yeah, that's a lot, man. They're pumping them out.
I guess when they, like, put them all together, like, it makes it a little harder to, like, yeah, but no, there were quite a few.
I mean, keep in mind, like, similar to last year, these secret layers are dispersed during and between main sets, so there's just always something to talk about. Always, in terms of Magic. Always. Yeah.
I think the most notable secret lair here was that it was the Stranger Things one, because it had more mechanically unique cards. This one, though, felt like it was made much more for Commander, specifically because of the Friends Forever mechanic, which is on all of them. So they had the ability to, like, team up with them with only each other.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know is going to open the door, I think, for a lot of CDH players, because now they have the first partner pairing that can be all five colors, which is, like, Mike the Dungeon and Eleven the Mage. I've also seen a lot of people talking about, like, Lucas and Will being teamed up because of that's, like, the first good combination of cards where you can use Lurrus as your companion. Because, like, there was no other black-white two-mana commander prior to Will, except one, and, like, the companion mechanic wasn't even going to be that good. But, like, Loris and CDH is going to, like, be good. So that deck sounds cool. So, yeah. I guess... But the cool thing, too, is, like, so unlike The Walking Dead, they said, along with this release, that we will see, like, Magic versions of these cards, too, on the list with the release of one of the sets next year, New Compendia. Which is cool, because that's a pretty quick turnaround, and it shows that, like, WotC again is listening, because there's a lot of, like, outcry about that around Secret Lair for The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm, yeah, so they're like, okay, we're gonna do it, because you guys clearly have said, like, oh, that's not in our best interest. So that's cool. Let's see. And I guess the other notable Secret Lair to talk about is the Zendra Split and Okun one, which is a 100-card Secret Lair where all the cards were foiled, and it had a lot of great value. Like, I think people who were kind of, like, doing the math, like, all the cards in the deck would have actually kind of been around, like, $400 worth of cards. So it's, like, a really good deal. Uh-huh. Or it was, at least. But yeah, so that was out as well. And I think it's probably a sign saying that they're going to be doing this more often in the future. Like, you know, Commander's our most popular format. We're going to make a Commander to go like this probably at least, like, two or three times a year now. Because they'll probably just, like, start asking, like, WotC employees, like, what's your deck? Because, like, this was a Gavin's deck that they based it around. So I bet they'll, like, get a lot of people in WotC. That's, like, huge for them to, like, promote one of their players, and then also not have to make, like, a deck. Like, you just had someone else do the work for you.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot that can be said about Secret Lairs, but that's, like, an entirely different episode that I don't want to get into. With that, we'll kind of move into, like, miscellaneous other events that happened this year, besides, like, you know, this all these sets and rules announcements and Secret Lairs. There was, let's see, announced for next year was Kamigawa, Neon Dynasty, New Capenya, Dominaria, and the Brothers War, all set for 2022. So that's the stuff we can start getting hyped about. I think they've already started to sprinkle in some things for Kamigawa, Neon Dynasty, already starting the hype train for that. There's also the Unfinity, which we've known about for a long while. It's like Carnival in space. And, maybe you can talk about it, Guy, because I think you know a little bit more than I do. But it's a little bit... This is, like, fairly recent news where it's like, hey, here's this silver border set, but all of it's in black border, and instead we're doing an acorn stamp at the bottom middle of the card. And that's how you can indicate whether or not it's, like, legal in these various formats. And it's a little bit contentious.
It is a little bit contentious. I totally agree. Because the silver border is what makes everything stand out so much about this not being a legit Magic card. But, you know, you just gotta, like, kind of hope and trust that, like, the players who aren't going to take advantage of the fact that it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to use this card. But it might be hard because, like, they might do something that is totally, like, questionable in Magic. So yeah, but it's cool that they're doing it as well. So, like, there's positives and there's negatives. The cool part being, though, like, you know, all these cards that you're buying kind of have value now, because a lot of people felt bad for, like, buying Silver Border sets because, you know, it's like, oh, okay, unless my playgroup's cool with them, I'm not going to be able to play with any of these. They're kind of like a one-and-done thing most of the time. So, yeah. We also have a D&D Commander Legends theme set coming out next year, so it's kind of like Commander Legends 2 already, which is nuts. We got Masters 2022, Double Masters 2022, which is just going to be Double Masters again, with just more insane reprints, probably. We got the continuation of Dumpstart 2022, with some new packs that they'll be adding, which means some new cards. and the Netflix show that will be coming out next year as well. So we got a lot to look forward to.
Well, I thought that got canceled.
No. The original directors quit, and they hired a new director, and then they talked about it during this announcement day. And they even showed some, not footage, but they showed, like, a lot of concept art. So, yeah, I am interested to see what will come out of that.
Yeah, and I will say, I feel like just recently the bar has been raised because League of Legends put out...
Arcane. Oh, shit!
They put out Arcane, which is amazing. It's an amazing series. You do not need to know anything about League of Legends to enjoy the show. And that's how it should be.
Yeah.
So step it up, Wizards. Like make your IP interesting enough to, like, make the common person who knows nothing about Magic actually want to learn about it.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
You know, COVID's still going on, and it is difficult to do stuff, but we did have MTG Vegas, which I know a lot of people went to go play at the Commander event, right, Blake?
Yes, so, like, there were no, again, COVID's still happening, there were no Command Fests. Instead, there was only really MTG Vegas, which has happened, like, every year, and, like, half of it is just Commander players going and playing Commander. And so I know that there were a lot of, like, big names in the Commander community that went, and I saw it all on social media. I did not feel comfortable going, and I also have enough things in my personal life that, like, that's like, I can't really go. And this was right before, like, Omicron came out, so it's like, oh, that's fairly good timing. Yeah, we'll see. I'm really interested to see where we'll be in 2022 to see if what the status of big events are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because one of these days I want to meet up with you at a Command Fest.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, wrapping up here.
Yeah. All right. So, we kind of do this every year, but best set 2021. What do you think, Blake?
Well, I was a little bit surprised that we both agreed on this, but I'm going to say Modern Horizons 2 was, like, the knockout for me.
Yeah, I agree for the main deck cards, especially. I think it did give you some commanders, too, that could do some things that weren't quite popular before. Like, you got the clues, you got the, what was that other one? Enchantress, Squirrels. You got a few commanders mm-hmm. who are, like, mm-hmm. needing a dedicated spot towards. Though, then Strixhaven also had those commanders that did just completely unique things to the color pairing that it was part of, so it's tough to say, like, who had the better commanders, though. So Modern Horizons 2, best set for, like, 99 cards. I'm a little torn who I would say had the better commanders, though.
I'd say Kaldheim.
Okay, interesting. Okay. Okay, so now most powerful card and most powerful commander.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of tough. Like, if we're just speaking purely from a power level perspective, I honestly would say that, like, the most powerful card, like, for the main deck would be, like, my vote would be for Esper Sentinel. Just because it's, like, for what it does for card draw as a white card, it's just, like, phenomenal at what that is. Like, mono white card draw, like, yes, Esper Sentinel, this is, like, what you want. Like, this is what players have been begging for, like, years. Literal years. Like, something this powerful for, like, mono white card draw. And sure, you can splash it in other color identities, but this is just, I play it, it's always so strong, draws me so many cards. It's played against me, and I'm like, ah, shit, this is such a strong card, I'm gonna have to deal with this, probably. It's just, I see it all the time, it's very powerful. What about you? Like, do you agree with that, or, like, is there
another card that you have in mind? I'm totally with you. Esper Sentinel,
okay.
Best card. I didn't write anything, because I was like, no, I agree with that. I can't think of anything different.
Yeah, I was thinking like Raghavan or like Dothy Voidwalker, but like those ones aren't as widespread. Like Esper Sentinel is just there, you see it all the time, and I think that's an indicator of how powerful it is. Because
I think Dothy Voidwalker is probably the second best. I think it's totally good, but I think
it's pretty pushed.
It does work a little better in some decks that are like trying to take advantage of making sure that your opponents have lots of cards in their graveyard. Whereas like this Esper Sentinel can drop into like any white deck that cares about artifacts, because like a lot of them do. Yes. So I think it just does more good for the format and the color that actually needs the help. Yeah.
Yes.
I think I agree. Esper Sentinel with Dothy Voidwalker's like potential is so much higher on like one. Like a one-time use kind of thing. So like it's always like nice to like fantasize about magical Christmas land, but it's probably not always going to do that every time, whereas Esper Sentinel will always probably draw you at least a couple cards.
Agreed. And what would you say is the most powerful commander from this entire year?
So I also agree with you. Probably Cody, Voracious Codex. The only other one that I would maybe put in contention is Galazeth, who's the Izzet Commander Dragon from Strixhaven, who's kind of like an Urza, you now have access to red. But yeah, he's pretty good too.
Yeah, I agree that deck can be pretty powerful. Like, I would still say Cody. Like, Cody can win pretty consistently, like turn two and three.
Yes. I guess, like, totally in like the sense of like super competitive build, yeah. But yeah, casually speaking, too, Galazeth probably up there. So yes, I agree with you. Totally in the CDH mind, Cody, Voracious Codex, best card or best commander. So. Alright, do you have any, like, general thoughts about 2021?
Yeah, so, like, closing up here, just general thoughts. Oh boy, this has been quite a year. When I think about the entire year and compare it to other years, I'd say all of the sets in 2021 were relatively tame, like, in terms of power level, which I appreciated. After, like, the pure insanity that was, like, Commander Legends back in, like, the previous year. And just that year in general. Broadly speaking, again, like, the power level, like, throughout this entire year, it's been pretty, like, mellow. It's not like anything is busting and, rocking the boat and potentially capsizing it. That is the Commander format. Like, it's all just been like, alright, chugging along, we're doing our thing, we're having a great time. Or having the best time that we possibly can. And I think it's been fairly stable for that. I will say that I'm kind of curious what you think, because this has been a topic of discussion a lot this year, is the sheer increased number of possible commanders and just really product in general that has come out this year. Like, there are more commanders that were, like, printed this year than any other previous year. And I'm curious whether... like, you think, like, that's a problem or not?
I don't think it's a... I'm not at the point where it's, like, a problem that I'm super concerned with, because I'm sure there is a person out there who will always, like, play one of those commanders, like, just because they like it so much. Like, it may not be the most popular commander, but, like, everyone's gonna have a pick.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of started weeding out those even in our reviews, which I think, you know, I guess it does kind of just speak to the content creator in us, where it's like, it gets tough to, like, really care about all of these new commanders, especially when we were having, like, sets that only had, like, 9 of them in, like, past years.
Yeah, like, early in the format's history, I'm talking, like, 2010 sort of timeline here, like, there weren't very many legendary creatures being printed because, like, Commander wasn't really being thought of or considered, and so, like, you had to wait a really long time for a new Commander to come out, and so, like, people don't think about this, but like early EDH was actually pretty homogenous because there's only like a few dozen commanders like at the time. And now the, because it's an eternal format that doesn't rotate or anything, like a decade later we have like over 1,000 possible commanders, and the format in terms of like who you can choose for your commander is pretty diverse. So I'd actually say it's actually a benefit that WotC's printing all of these new possible commanders. Like, yes, the downside is like you can feel overwhelmed at times, like we do sometimes, but I think it's a worthwhile trade-off. Yeah, I guess we can kind of follow up on that, which is like us and other people kind of feeling a bit burnt out from just the sheer like constant hype between like the sets and the secret layers. There's always just something to talk about Magic. We felt a little bit burnt out this year, and just all the cards that are coming out, more cards like this year than like any previous year. What do you have to add to that?
Yeah, it's tough, but I guess just like with the increase of people being interested in the game, like it's just going to get more and more popular, which is a blessing and a curse, I suppose. I mean, I'm not starting to hate the game, I guess, because like, you know, in comparison to like still Yu-Gi-Oh, decks were pretty consistent. I still feel like Commander has a very, is in a healthy place where like things aren't feeling very consistent along a lot of decks, you know? Like everyone's doing more unique things and like having fun with it, whereas Yu-Gi-Oh is just kind of still like, I'm playing to play the best decks, you know?
Yeah, like even if decks are really consistent, it's like, alright, it's still 100 card singleton and it's like multiplayer, and just by those dynamics inherently, like there's a lot less, you know, it's not like Yu-Gi-Oh 1v1 where it's like every game is pretty much the same and like it's stale really quick. It's like there's so many fucking commanders, like it's all like it's always fresh.
Yeah,
that's what I like, or feel, at least for me. Other people might not feel that way, and that's fine. Yeah, do what is best for you, listeners. All right, one of the last questions I have is like, how do we feel about white cards that came out this year? It's been a major topic of discussion throughout this year, and has bled over from the previous year. You know, people talking about how right now in the format, white really needs help to catch up to pretty much every single other color identity. Do we feel like 2021 gave us good white cards? Enough of them?
So I'm looking, and Esper Senegal already is in the top 12 best white cards, or like most played. I'm trying to go down this list to see if anything else from this year has made it as like notable, but it's not looking like it. So I want to say, oh, Archaeomancer's Map, I feel like that, okay, that is on this list, but it's not as high as maybe it should be. Maybe people are sleeping on it a little.
Well, keep in mind, some of the cards that you're looking at have been out for longer than Esper Sentinel. I think Esper Sentinel will just climb the charts.
That's true, that is true. Okay. Yeah, I think in terms of, like, did we get great new white cards? Yes. Because, like, they are reprinting a lot of these, like, staple white cards, too. I think they needed to reprint a few of the more of them, like Enlightened Tutor and Smothering Tithe. But we did get, like, another Teferi's Protection reprint this year. We got, like, Mother of Ruins reprints. We got Elesh Norm reprints. We got a lot of good white card reprints, too, which I think is great. Because that makes those more accessible as well.
True, yeah.
Approaches the Second Sun. But yeah, so I'm content with the amount of white cards we got, I guess. It feels better than last year, honestly. Just because, like, what did we kind of get last year? Mangara, Chroma's Will. But, like, in the Commander Legends decks, set, there really weren't as many powerful white cards as we wanted there to be.
Yeah. Like, not this year, but relatively recently. Like, we've gotten Dranath Magistrate from Ikoria.
Oh, we did.
We've got Smothering Tithe. So there's also been Generous Gift, again, not this year, but fairly recently. And those are all like basically like white staples. So slowly but surely, we're getting some very powerful cards, and now Esper Sentinel is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, I'm just optimistic for the future. I think WotC's facing the right direction. They're slowly walking the path. I'm hoping they'll continue to walk the path.
Yeah. I'm optimistic. This is around now the time where, you know, they've kind of been teasing, like, they're coming, but you gotta give it some time. And now's the time where I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm starting to see what you're talking about. With, like, white cards coming.
So, Commander's continuing to grow in popularity. You know, last year was, like, the year of Commander, and it really felt like it. Oh, boy. Like, it was a lot. This year felt, like, a little bit more manageable. But I think overall it's a good thing. I think the format overall is in a pretty healthy place, actually. What about you?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm still optimistic for the future, and I'm still enjoying the format, I guess. That's a big part. It is, I think, just to the downside of, like, all this product overwhelming sensation, and then also, like, in addition to being then, like, content creator, like, a lot of people are making content, too, and, like, it's kind of hard to keep up with all that as well. So I feel like that's another thing that is, like, a good and a bad. Want people to talk about the format so the format can grow, but also, like, now it's just tough to, like, keep up with all these content creators.
Yeah, I mean, we both work full-time jobs, so it's, like, our free time is very limited, and it's, like, I can't just listen to 10 hours of EDH content.
Yeah. Also, good white cards. The Book of Exalted Deeds. I forgot to mention that one. Wedding Ring, we just got. So, okay. Yeah, starting to think of some more good white cards, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm surprised it'll probably change by the time this episode comes out or in the future. Cards prices fluctuate. I'm a little bit surprised that Wedding Ring is like fucking $20.
Do you think it should be more or less?
Oh, I think it should be like a little bit less. Like, it's a good card, but I don't think it's like $20 good.
It is in short demand, though. That's a part of, like, you know, collector boosters containing commander cards, like. See, that's something we kind of forgot to talk about, but was a topic of stuff, but it's just hard to keep up with so much stuff, which kind of just goes back to, you know, what we were saying about the burnout.
I don't have written down, but I think another topic is, like, as Commander grows in popularity, like, WotC simply can't print enough reprints to match the secondary market price rising on just, like, EDH staples in general. So it does feel like, despite WotC's best efforts with, like, the list and various, like, Time Spiral remastered or whatever sets that are just reprints, and even the sprinkled reprint here or there throughout sets, and even Secret Layers, the price of secondary market of cards is just, like, slowly going up and up, and it just kind of is, like, you and I constantly say, like, oh my god, I'd never get into Commander now, because it's just, like,
oh, price.
All these cards we have. Yeah, the price is just ridiculous. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, but I just wanted to mention it again.
Yep, all those dual lands, like, sucks to suck now, really.
Yeah, proxy, don't at me, alright.
Okay, well, let's just end here. So, thank you very much for listening. Yeah. We are the Wizard's Zap Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. If you'd like to send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at thewizardstaff101. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a great night and a wonderful 2022. Peace.
See you there.